Hi, and welcome to Using XML in SQL Server and SQL Azure's Database. I'm Pete Harris. I'm here with Graham Malcolm.
Hi.
I'm a senior content developer at Microsoft. I work on various content here at Microsoft and have for quite a while, back since 1995. And Graham, can you tell us about yourself?
Yeah, sure. So I've also been working with Microsoft for a number of years, ever since SQL Server 4.2, in fact, if you can remember that far back. And I work with Pete as a senior content developer, creating learning content for database professionals. So in the course that we're going to look at for SQL Server and XML, there's a number of things that we're going to cover. So there's six modules altogether that we need to go through. We're going to start with an introduction to XML and what it is and why you might want to use it, and then really dig into how we use XML within the context of a database, either SQL Server or Azure SQL Database. So we'll talk about storing and querying XML. We'll talk about implementing XML indexes to improve the performance of those queries. We'll talk about working with typed XML, so using schemas to validate that XML is valid. And we'll look at creating relational data from XML and creating XML from relational data, which is kind of a common pattern that we need to implement. So lots to look forward to in this course, and I hope you're going to enjoy studying that with us. Let me set some expectations about what we're at, what we're looking for in terms of the audience for this course. Obviously, you're attending, so you're interested in learning about XML with SQL Server, and that's great. Really, what we're looking for are database developers or people who are going to work with databases. And those databases may need to store relational data in the traditional sense, but also perhaps some XML data, or at least work with XML. Additionally, if you're pursuing certification, if you're planning to sit any of the Microsoft certified professional exams for SQL Server, many of those exams include questions on the use of XML in SQL Server, and this course should give you an insight into some of that. If you are attending this course now and you haven't got any experience of Transact SQL, or you haven't worked with SQL Server or Azure SQL databases before, then some of the syntax might be a little tricky for you. So we do recommend that prior to attending this course, you at least have some Transact SQL knowledge, and there are Transact SQL courses available on Microsoft Virtual Academy and elsewhere that you could use to prepare yourself for this course.
In this module, we're going to talk about an introduction to XML data. Before you can use XML in SQL Server, you need to know some basics about XML. So we're going to start with a review of XML before we start looking at SQL Server.
Okay, so let's take a look at what we're going to cover in this module then. First of all, we'll talk a little bit right from the very beginning, what is XML? We'll get right to basics with that. And then we'll talk about how we use XML to represent data structures, which is really what this capability is all about. We'll talk a little bit about XML namespaces and what those are and why we'd want to use them. And we'll talk about the support that there is for XML in both SQL Server, the box product, and Azure SQL Database, the cloud platform as a service offering. So plenty to look for in this module. Let's move on and look at some of that. So let's talk a little bit about what XML is. XML is based on an older syntax called Standard Generalized Markup Language. And you can think of SGML as being the root language for things like HTML, which you might be familiar with, as well as XML and other languages that use markup. The point about XML, it looks on the face of it a little bit similar to HTML, and I'm sure, Pete, you can see there in the example there, you know, we got tags and we got attributes within those tags. It looks a bit like some HTML code. The key difference is that HTML is designed to represent something visually. It's the visual display that is described by the markup, whereas XML is used to describe data structures and the values of those data structures. So where you see a tag in XML, for example, in here we've got an order XML document with an ID attribute, and we've got a salesperson tag and a customer tag, these things represent data entities. And within those entities, we've got attributes that describe properties of those particular data structures. So why would we want to do any of this? What's the point of XML? Where is it used for? Well, it's commonly used in a number of application scenarios. Most commonly, I guess, is for exchanging information, exchanging data between applications. So you might use XML to describe a data structure in an application that's written in one language on one particular platform, and then use XML to communicate those data structures across to back-end services or to other applications that need to make use of them. It's also commonly used for configuration files. You'll find in pretty much every system now that is running out there, either on the web or including services running locally on your computer, there will be configuration files that those services use to, you know, customize the way that they run. And very often, those configuration files use an XML structure to describe what they're going to do. And log files and other sort of files that are used by the system quite often use XML as well. And the final thing is data storage. We typically, as application developers, think about storing data in relational tables. So we have databases that have tables that are related to one to another. Quite commonly now, because XML is so frequently used by applications, that's become the native storage format for many systems as well. So XML is used for that. There's one final thing you'll note there at the bottom, Pete, something that catches everybody out, and I'm sure we'll find as I go through the demos and we look at this stuff that I get caught out by it as well. XML is case sensitive. So unlike HTML, where it really doesn't matter what case you put your tags in, in XML, the tags are case sensitive. So a lowercase tag with order is different from an order with a capital O, which is different from an order with all caps. So that's something to bear in mind. So here's an example of a basic XML structure on the slide. Let's explore this in a little bit of detail. You can see there's some blue text at the top there, and that's what we refer to as a processing instruction. So what that's for, it's not really a part of the data structure itself. This particular processing instruction just indicates that this is an XML document. It's version 1 of XML. And it indicates the encoding that's used for the text in the document. And the processing instruction is used by any client application or any application that's going to load this XML. It will look at the processing instructions, which are typically at the beginning of the file, and it will use them to determine how it behaves, how it works with this XML structure. That make sense?
It does. What other kind of processing instructions might there be?
Right. So, as I say, this one just simply gives it an encoding. Another really common one that you'll see, there's a language called XSLT, or XML Style Sheet for Transformations is what that stands for. And what that does is allow me to take an XML document, apply a bunch of rules as to how that should be converted to, for example, HTML, and then displayed. So sometimes you'll see a processing instruction at the beginning of an XML file that tells the client how to convert it into HTML in order to display the data that's contained in the XML. So those processing instructions, there are various ones there, but that's a really common one that's used to display the XML. All right, let's move further on into this document then and look at some of the other things that we can see here. There are a number of elements. There's one kind of root element called order. You can see here that everything is contained within order. And then within order, we've got a salesperson, and that's the beginning of the salesperson. And this little slash here indicates that's the end of the salesperson. And these things are called elements. And elements can contain other elements, and they can contain values, and they can contain attributes. So in this case, we've got an order element that contains a salesperson element, which in turn contains a name element. Customer element contains a name element. The items element contains multiple item elements, as its name might suggest. So we've got this notion of an element. Basically, an element is anything that has a beginning tag, something in the middle, and then an end tag. Now, you'll see that this particular element here, name, just has some text in there. The text itself isn't in a tag. It's enclosed within the name tag. That is the text value of that element. So the value of name in this instance is Dan Drayton. And the value of name for the salesperson is Naomi Sharp. And hopefully you can see that it's reasonably intuitive. I mean, looking at this, you'd be able within a few minutes to figure out what this thing represents. It represents an order, and the order has a salesperson and a customer and some items. So it's pretty self-describing is the phrase that people use for XML. It's designed to be readable. Obviously, it's readable by machines, but it's actually reasonably readable for humans as well. What else have we got in here? Well, there's something called an attribute. And you can see there's a number within the elements that are things that are assigned a value. So in this case, ID equals 123456, date equals 2015-01-01, and down here we've got item, ID equals 127, quantity equals 2. So within this element, there are attributes. And you can think of those as properties of the element.
Is there any importance to the sequence that they're in, Graham?
Right, and that's a good point. We says here order is not enforced. And that's quite important as well. You've got to get your understanding that an XML document is, although we can read it linearly, we can start at the top and work our way through and it makes sense, that's not necessarily how an application or a service will read this document. So the order of elements can be dictated. I can determine that a document has, you know, the salesperson element always comes before the customer element, for example. But what you can't do is determine the order of the attributes. Order is not enforced for attributes. These are just the properties of that thing. And when an application reads the XML, it can read them in any order. And we'll actually see that a bit later on. I said earlier on that an element is anything that has an open tag and then a matching close tag. There is actually shorthand. If you have an element that doesn't contain any values or any child elements, if it just contains attributes or if it's just simply an empty element, then you have this shorthand syntax here to close it. So I don't have to have, I could have item and then close that and then have another open slash item and close that, like I've done for salesperson and name here. But I don't have to do that. If there are no values or child elements, there's a shorthand syntax just for closing it. So if you see this, it just means that that's the entirety of the item element. There isn't anything else inside it. And then finally, you'll see occasionally there are comments. Like any other language that you might have worked with, there's a way of adding comments. It's actually similar to how you add comments in HTML. That just let me add documentation effectively to the document for human purposes. The computer doesn't necessarily do anything with those, but for us to understand.
That sounds really interesting, Graham. Can we have a look at the demo?
Sure. So let's take a look at some XML just to get a feel for some real XML documents. And I've got here in my demo machine, I've got a thing called order.xml, which, as you might guess, is an order. And let's first of all open that with Visual Studio. You can use you could use Notepad, for example. You use any authoring tool for these, anything that authors text. But Visual Studio gives me that nice kind of color coding so I can see what's going on. And you can see here's that XML document that we saw just a minute ago. So I can see that there's my processing instruction at the top. My order element contains a salesperson element, which has a name, and so on. Everything that we saw previously on the slide there. So in this particular case, I've got the order called, the order with the ID 123456, which was placed on the 1st of January 2015. Salesperson number 123, who is Naomi Sharp, was the salesperson. And customer number 921, whose name is Dan Drayton, was the customer. And what Dan ordered was product number 561. He ordered one of those, and product number 127, he ordered two of those. So fairly self-explanatory. Now let's actually look at this, the same file. I'm just going to open it in Internet Explorer, which natively understands XML as well. So open that up. And this speaks to a point I talked about when we looked at this on the slide. You can see here that the date is now displayed first, and the ID is displayed second.
There's that order's not important problem.
Exactly. So in the source file, which is exactly the same file I've just opened, the ID comes first, then the date. But because we can't enforce the order of attributes, you've got to accept that sometimes an application will open it and those attributes will be in a different order. It's really down to the application how it decides to interpret that. So that becomes quite important when we start thinking about how we'll process this stuff. You can't necessarily rely on the ordinal position of an attribute. Later on, we'll see how we can enforce the ordinal position of elements, but you can't enforce the position of an attribute. And that's probably a key thing to take away from this.
So let's take a look at how we represent data in the XML.
Okay, yeah, absolutely. Let's look at that. We've previously seen how the XML document has a structure, and we can see it here. We've got the ID attribute there, and we've got the date. And we saw previously that attribute order might not necessarily be enforced. So that implies that when applications and services read this stuff, they don't read it linear the way that we do. They don't read it, like a document. And actually what tends to happen is we treat these things as if they were something called node trees, or just trees sometimes we refer to them. So we think of the XML as being structured into this kind of tree-like hierarchy. And you can see that I've got this order element which contains everything else. So this is what's called a well-formed document. That's the phrase that we use. And a well-formed document is any XML where there is a single root element that contains everything else in the document. So in this case, it's an order document, and order, therefore, is the root. So we can see on the tree in the slide here that order is at the root of the tree, and that's represented by a slash symbol, a forward slash. You can then see I've put in here the attributes that are there, ID and date. These are a slightly lighter color to indicate that they're attributes, and we can't enforce that that's the order they appear in the tree. They just will appear as children, direct children of order. And another child of order is salesperson, but that one's an element, and it has an ID attribute and a name element. So you begin to get this idea of a hierarchy that includes descendants. You've got children of parents, and that's the terminology that's used. And of course, you've got, you know, ancestors further down. So item is not a direct child of order, but it's a descendant of order, because we go order, items, item. So when we come to navigate through these documents and work with them, that's the way that they're structured. They're structured as trees, effectively, with the root element at the root of the tree, and then all the children and grandchildren and other descendants taking their place within the tree. So I mentioned the idea of well-formed documents when we talked about that, and that implies that there's alternatives that we can look at there. So we talk about documents and fragments. So let's take a look at that. Documents, as I said, are well-formed. They have a single root element, and that root element contains everything else. It might contain attributes, and it might contain child elements, and it might contain values, but there is a single employee element in this case. So that there is an XML document. I can also have XML that is fragments. It doesn't have a root element. And when we come to work with this in a database, this becomes quite important as well. You can have XML, but it's a fragment. It's not a well-formed document. An XML parser will open this and say, hey, this is invalid. It doesn't have a single root element. It's not a document, but it is a fragment of XML. And each of the elements within that themselves that are well-formed, so I've got a product ID, a product element, which has an ID and a price and a value, and then I close that product. So the product itself is well-formed, but then there's another one, and both of these aren't enclosed within a single root element, so it isn't a well-formed document, but it is a fragment of XML. So we need to be clear in our head about the distinction between a document, which is a root containing all of the other elements, and fragments, which are basically just collections of elements that don't have a single root enclosing them all.
So as it stands in the document we've been looking at, you can have sort of any elements you want. Can you introduce the concept of XML namespaces for us?
Sure. So that's an important thing to look at. If you take a look at this order ID that we have here in front of us, the order itself has an ID and a date, but then there's this salesperson which has a name, which is fine, so we know what a name is, but then later on this customer has a name. So if I were just to go through the tree for this document and find the name, how do I know which name I'm looking at? Is this the name of the customer, or is this the name of the salesperson? So that's a potential for confusion there. There's ambiguity there. I've got this thing called a name. It could be even more confusing if you imagine this were an XML document for a bookstore, a store that sells books. And in that document, there might be something called title. Now, does that mean the title of the book, or does that mean the title of a customer, like Mr. or Mrs. or Doctor or whatever? So there's potential for ambiguity if I've got elements with the same name, but they mean different things. They're semantically different. So to help us deal with that, if we take a look at the XML now, I've added in this XML NS attribute here into the root element here. So the order says XML NS HTTP AW / order. Now the HTTP AW order is not pointing to anything. It's not a web address. It's not going to go out there and look there to find out what an order is. That's really just a unique identifier. It could actually be any unique string. It could be a GUID or something like that. Typically, we use web addresses or URLs, URIs, effectively, to uniquely identify things. So we got the order tag there. And you can see in the document that that means everything within order, unless we specify otherwise, belongs to this namespace. That's the namespace, an XML namespace that determines an order. So this ID is belonging to that namespace, the date belongs to that namespace, the salesperson belongs to that namespace, except that in the salesperson, we've got another XML NS declaration. So we're switching namespace, right? So we're doing it as we go effectively through the document. We're within the context of the salesperson element, we have another namespace, and that applies to everything within the salesperson element. So the name in the salesperson belongs to the AW sales namespace. And similarly in the customer, we declare a new namespace there, so we switch context again, and the name in here belongs to the customer namespace. So you can think of this as being a way of allowing the client applications that are processing this XML to differentiate between the name that belongs to salesperson and the name that belongs to customer. Now that's all very well, but it's a little bit complicated and a little bit messy to keep switching namespace every time we go through. And what happens if I have an element that has attributes or values from multiple namespaces in there? So to see how that works out, you can see we've got another problem in this document. We've got multiple IDs. We've got an ID for order, we've got an ID for the salesperson, we've got an ID for the customer, we've got an ID for each item. So there's multiple IDs, all of which mean slightly different things depending on whereabout in the document they appear. And the way that we can deal with that is we can declare all of our namespaces up front. So in my order element, I've said, right, we're going to have a namespace, and I'm going to give it the abbreviation O. It's just a kind of shorthand for that namespace. That's going to represent the order namespace. S represents the sales namespace, C represents the customer namespace, and P represents the product namespace. And because I've declared all of those up front in that root element, I can then use them throughout the document to indicate that, well, my salesperson belongs to the sales namespace, it's got an S, and its ID belongs to that namespace as well. It's the ID that represents the ID for a salesperson. And the same for my items, they belong to the order namespace. Now the P is for product, so notice that I'm mixing and matching namespaces within the same element. I've got an ID for a product, and I've got a quantity for an order, which makes sense because orders don't have, items don't have IDs, but the products that you order have IDs. Does that make sense?
It does.
Excellent.
So that's a good overview of XML, but let's take a look at how SQL Server can use XML as a data type.
Sure. Both SQL Server and Azure SQL Database have support for XML, and there's a number of different ways that this support manifests itself. Support for XML in SQL Server actually started way back in SQL Server 2000. We introduced the ability to query relational data and convert it to XML, and similarly to take XML and, parse that into relational structures. But that capability, that functionality has been added to over the years and now appears in both SQL Server and Azure SQL Database. So let's take a look at what we've got there. We've got this XML data type. So there's a native data type in the database engine that can be used for XML. And we'll see later on in this course how that is used and how you work with that. Because we were able to store XML in the XML data type, there's a language called XQuery. Now that's not unique to SQL Server or Azure SQL Database. That's a standard language that's used for querying XML. It's used by all sorts of different applications. You can do that within a .NET application that you're building in Visual Studio or any other language that natively supports XML. So XQuery is a standard way to query XML documents in the same way that Transact SQL is a standard way to query relational structures in a database. So we've got XQuery support in SQL Server and Azure SQL Database. XML indexes, just looking at what's in the rest of the module here, we've got the ability to create indexes on those columns that contain XML. So in the same way that I can create an index on a table, a regular table that contains a column of customer names or whatever it might be, I can also create indexes on XML columns, and those are specifically designed to optimize the performance of the X queries that I'll run against that XML data. We've got support for schemas, and we'll look at that later on in the course. We'll look at how we can use a schema to determine, hey, not only does this column contain XML, but it contains specific XML elements and attributes. It's a way of validating the XML that gets put in there. And then there's two final clauses that we'll cover off at the end. There's the for XML clause, which is a way of generating XML from relational data. And there's the open XML function, which is a way of going in the other direction, taking an XML document and shredding that, as the terminology goes, out into relational structures. So you might be wondering why we've, you know, got all of these capabilities in SQL Server and Azure SQL Database. And there's a number of ways that we might want to work with XML. So for example, you've got an application that may just already use XML. There may be multiple components of that application that exchange messages in XML format or describe data structures in XML. And it might just make sense to store that and query that in its XML structure without converting it backward and forward. So you might want to do that, but do that efficiently and transactionally alongside your other relational data. And that's one reason why you might want to mix and match XML and relational data in SQL Server or Azure SQL Database. You might want to have interoperability between relational data and XML data. So again, having them stored both in the same place makes sense. You might want to build cross-domain applications. So you have to have this portability of your data moving from one platform to another. And perhaps those relational structures that you've got don't work very well. And perhaps you're storing XML structures that are used by JavaScript elsewhere, and it needs to parse the XML. So it makes sense to be able to do that. Makes sense if your data is sparse and you don't know what the structure is going to be like. Sometimes you build an application and you'll know that a customer has a name and has an address and all the rest of it, but you might have an application that keeps track of conversations you have with your customer, and you might keep notes. Now, those could be ad hoc. There could be all sorts of things in there. So the ability to use XML is for semi-structured or non-structured data within your application where it might be sparse. Sometimes there'll be something, sometimes there won't. It makes sense to use XML for that. So lots of reasons to consider using XML in a relational database. And what we're going to do throughout the rest of this course is examine just exactly how we can do that with SQL Server and with Azure SQL Database.
So that was a great overview of XML. Can you just sum it up for us?
Sure, yeah. So we talked a little bit about what XML is. We talked about the idea that it's a way of describing data. It's a way of talking about the data structures. So we had that order with a salesperson and a customer and the items. And we could see that it was self-describing, but it was also machine readable. It had attributes, it had text values and so on. We talked about how we represent data with XML, and we talked a little bit about namespaces. You might remember that this notion that if I've got an XML document that has attributes or elements with the same name, that can be ambiguous. So we have this idea of applying namespaces to say, well, in this instance, title means title of the customer, or in this instance, title means the title of a book or whatever it might be. And then lastly, we looked at what's the support for XML in SQL Server and Azure SQL Database. And I gave a very quick kind of countdown of the different ways that XML is supported. And that's what we're going to dive into for the rest of the course.